Welcome to the Knowledgeable Parent Podcast, where we share tips, research, and resources to help you to make the best decisions for yourself, your children, and your family as you learn to live your best life as a parent. I'm your host, a South Dakota licensed marriage and family therapist, a registered play therapist supervisor, and most importantly, a mom, Emily Laring. Hello, and welcome to today's podcast. Today, I'm excited to have Angie Hoheisel as a guest to talk more about a trauma treatment approach called brain spotting. Now, that's probably a new word for people that they aren't aware of, so we will talk more about that in a little bit. But before we get into that, I want to take a moment to introduce you to Angie, who is a therapist here at Encompass Mental Health. She is a licensed professional counselor of mental health in South Dakota, a certified clinical trauma professional, and an EMDR and brain spotting provider. So welcome, Angie.
Thank you so much for having me. This is very exciting.
No problem. Yes, I'm excited to learn more about brain spotting. So to start, I mentioned a lot of different terms here. So maybe it would be helpful for those who are listening to just get a brief overview of what those titles mean and why they're important.
Absolutely. The licensed professional counselor mental health just means that I am fully licensed in the state of South Dakota to practice clinical mental health counseling. So that means that I can see anyone for a variety of reasons. And then a certified clinical trauma professional just means that I have a very specialized training and education in what trauma does to the body, how it affects the brain, and various ways to treat trauma from kids to adults.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit more when it comes to like the EMDR and brain spotting, because that's kind of the topic that we're discussing today. It does seem that the overarching theme in the work that you do is related to trauma. Can you explain a little bit more about what that word is? What is trauma, and how does it affect the body? How does it affect the brain?
I would love to. Trauma is kind of my thing. I know it sounds like a crazy thing for me to get excited about because it really deeply impacts people, but it's something that I am passionate about working with, or people who've experienced trauma. And really, a lot of times people think trauma is experiencing some kind of catastrophic death, but really what it is something that happens to you, and then your brain is unable to really recover and react from that. So it can be something small like, well, I guess small is a relative word, right? But it can be something from moving schools. That can be something that can be considered traumatic, to experiencing something like abuse, sexual abuse, violence, or experiencing a death in your family. So trauma is something that's big, and the reason why it's considered trauma is because of how it affects the brain. I can kind of go into the brain functioning because that's something that is really exciting and just very, very interesting, because a lot of times people think that when they experience trauma that they're the only ones, and they're kind of crazy because they're responding in such a way. But really what is happening is that their brain is responding in a very normal way to something that is very abnormal. Let me kind of get into the brain functioning. The brain functioning. So what happens in the brain when we experience trauma is that we kind of get stuck in that traumatic experience, and we're unable to learn new information associated with that. So what I like to tell people, and I'll get into how this affects EMDR in just a little bit, but what I like to tell people is that we have the front part of our brain, or the top part of our brain that kind of covers the whole thing, is our neocortex. And that's the part of our brain that is responsible for thinking. When we experience trauma, it kind of sticks more into the limbic system of our brain. So that is more where we react. So there's no thought or reason associated with how we respond to something. So a lot of people use the word trigger, and that is something that kind of happens in the mid part of our brain. And I like to talk to people about fight, flight, and freeze, because that is something that we don't necessarily control. Experience something that is triggering, we jump up and we run. That is a flight response. We need to get out of there. Our brain is telling us that it's time to run and protect yourself. If we're the kind of person that jumps up and puts your hands up and you're ready to fight, that's a fight response, and that is just something that you naturally do. Or if you're like me and you just kind of collapse and you freeze and try to assess the situation, that is also very normal, but it's something that you do kind of on a very not thinking and involuntary kind of situation. So when we experience trauma, it gets stored in that kind of area of our brain. So there's no thought and reason with it.
So earlier you mentioned that something as simple as a move to a new school could be a trauma for a kid. So what you're saying is if a kid goes to a new school and finds it traumatic, then the thinking part of their brain is affected, and that's going to affect some of the decisions that they are able to make.
Absolutely, because it's all about the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves in situations. Sure. So for example, if I moved to a new school in the third grade and I came from a school that I had plenty of friends, and then I went to a new school where I had no friends or struggled making friends, the story I might be telling myself about myself in that situation is that maybe I'm unlikable. Nobody likes me. Maybe I think that I'm ugly. You know, so it's the stories that we tell ourselves, and then that guides kind of our responses. And then our brain is then going to look for evidence that supports what we tell ourselves about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just the trauma that we've experienced, and it's the way our brain reacts and responds that then kind of can either improve or make the situation worse.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. Sure. Is there more about the brain that you think people need to know about related to trauma, or did you kind of cover the parts that you'd like to cover?
I'll probably get a little bit more into it as I talk about EMDR and then into brain spotting. And I think maybe I can talk about this will make more sense when I'm talking about EMDR, but our left brain and our right brain, and the left side of our brain is in charge of the thinking and our language and our problem-solving skills. So if we experience something that's traumatic, then we're kind of stuck in that part of our brain where, you know, if we're analytical and we're cut off from our emotions, then we're stuck in the left brain. And our right side of our brain then is in charge of our emotions. And our intuition. So if we are overwhelmed and we can't think straight, then we're kind of stuck in that side of our brain. And what EMDR does and what brain spotting does is tries to kind of merge both of those together. So you're using both sides of your brain, and then that is very necessary in the healing of our brain, especially as it relates to trauma.
Sure. So both EMDR and brain spotting are treatment options for trauma.
Correct.
So how are they the same and how are they different?
Well, I think if you're okay with it, before I get into how are they the same and how are they different, I'll talk a little bit about EMDR, because
sure.
EMDR is the treatment that came before brain spotting. And brain spotting was really kind of pulled off of adapting EMDR.
Sure.
And EMDR is, relatively speaking, kind of a new-ish treatment modality. It was developed in the 90s by Francine Shapiro, as I don't know that anybody will care to know this, but Francine Shapiro had discovered it, and it's eight phases of treatment. And the beginning phase is just kind of preparation, where if I have a client that comes in to talk to me and they say, I want brain spot or I want EMDR, I've experienced something traumatic and I really need to get through this and get past it. We really focus the initial part, the first phase, on making sure that they're not overly emotional, you know, kind of keeping them grounded, giving them tools they need to keep themselves emotionally regulated. Because if they're too dysregulated, it's going to make it very difficult to really get into the meat of this. So once we develop some skills to keep them regulated and to keep them feeling like they can manage their emotions, then we go into target management or target planning. So we identify a specific memory, either the memory that is the worst or one that is kind of the earliest memory. So if I have a client who's experienced a lot of traumatic childhood abuse, the client and I will decide together which memory we want to really target initially. A lot of times it's the earliest, but sometimes it might be the most emotionally kind of damaging. Planning for that memory, then what we do is we discuss the emotions associated with that specific memory. And then we focus in on how that feels in the body. And I talked a little bit earlier about the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves in these situations, and we focus in on that. And that is what we call the negative cognition. So why is it that this is so meaningful to me? So if I have experienced a tremendous amount of childhood abuse. And that's, and we're targeting, say, the time dad came home drunk and kicked the dog. Why is that so important to me? Or why does that stick into my brain? And maybe the story I tell myself is that I'm not safe. We focus on that. And then on the flip side of that, then we identify what would you rather believe about yourself in that memory or in that situation. And maybe what I'd rather believe about myself is that I'm safe, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. So in the target planning, so we kind of identify that maladaptive functioning, and then with the goal of doing the adaptive information processing. So from there, then we do the actual processing. And that's done, initially it was done through horizontal eye movements. Now it can be done through a lot of different ways. And really the whole purpose of it is to access both the left and the right hemisphere of the brain.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that can be done through either sometimes the clients will cross their arms over their body and tap their shoulders rhythmically for 20 to 30 seconds. I have clients can hold on to what I call tappers. So they buzz back and forth between their right and their left hand. Or I can have them wear headphones, and then they can have a tone in each ear back and forth. Some people use a light bar, so they follow the light bar back and forth horizontally with their eyes. And what that does is as the client then holds an image that represents that traumatic memory in their brain associated with where they're feeling that in their body and that negative cognition about themselves, I'm not safe. They then begin processing. So they do that for about 20 seconds. And then each time, then I or the other EMDR therapist will ask, okay, so what are you noticing? And there's no right or wrong way to do this. So it's all about kind of the brain heals itself. And it's such a fascinating process. So as they do this, the brain just kind of heals. So then if we started out with the picture that kind of represented the worst part of dad coming home drunk and kicking the dog, maybe as we're doing this, that changes. And then we notice a decrease in our bodily sensations and we start to feel calm and more regulated. So then each time and just go with that. And then we come back to the target several times to make sure that the body feels more calm and safe. So once we do that, then we go into what we call the desensitization. So once it no longer feels as distressing, it doesn't feel as activated, then we will go back to the image that represents that trauma and then couple that with the positive cognition. So I am safe. I'm okay. So then we pair the memory with something that's positive.
Sure.
Okay. One of the fascinating things that I think with EMDR that really sticks with me is they'd actually done some fMRI studies of some of people doing EMDR and had shown how it went, the memory initially located in the amygdala part of our brain, which is that limbic system that is in charge of fight, flight, and freeze, moved it from that part of the brain into the prefrontal cortex where you have reason. And the fascinating thing about that is that it doesn't take the bad memory away. It doesn't take the trauma away, but you're no longer as activated by it and you're no longer as triggered. So you can have that memory, but you can have reason with it and thought. Mm-hmm. So once we instill that positive cognition, then I make sure that the client, their body feels calm, kind of scan their body, and then we close up the session.
So this happens all throughout one session?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, there might be times where we just don't get a chance to fully reprocess that memory or process that memory. So we might run out of time. Initially, the recommendation is to do a 90-minute session. But what I notice is because I don't do EMDR full-time, I do it in conjunction with the rest of my practice because mm-hmm. I do mostly talk therapy and then I pull in EMDR or brain spotting as it feels natural and normal in the session. So I only do 60-minute sessions, so we don't do a full 90 minutes. But so there might be times where we don't fully get the person to a completely regulated state. So we will and then make sure that the person is can calm down, either by kind of going to that imagined safe place in their head, and just do some deep breathing exercises until they feel regulated again. But the beautiful thing about EMDR is that the brain continues to process even after the session.
Sure.
So
it's pretty cool that you mentioned the MRIs that we can see, like when you can actually see the brain lighting up in different areas to show that this has actually worked, mm-hmm. and it has taken it from the unconscious, I can't control this, it has control of me, basically, to I am able to think about this in a logical manner.
Mm-hmm.
It's really exciting, really, from a therapy perspective.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, because a lot of times people think, what can talking do?
Yeah.
You know, and
this is evidence that it does a lot.
It can do a lot because talking changes brain functioning. So it's a fascinating and just really exciting thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very cool. So when it comes to EMDR, this is something that you try to do this, all that you have already talked about, in one session. Is this something that you do occasionally when you're working with somebody, or is this something that someone commits to EMDR and they're going to do it 10, 20 sessions in a row when they come? Like, what does that timeline look like for people looking for EMDR?
It really varies. It varies based on clients' need, what they want. I've had some clients who come in and they're very committed and they want to do EMDR every session. And I've had other clients who want to just kind of sprinkle it in as it feels natural. I do always tell my clients, though, I don't want them to ever drive to the therapy office and feel more dysregulated and feel like they don't want to come. Mm-hmm. Because what that tells me then is we're pushing too fast, too hard too fast. And for me, when I'm dealing with trauma, it's important that we go at a pace and a rate that makes sense to the client. I don't want to increase symptoms unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And trauma is something that's so important for us to be aware of as professionals and as people in the community, that people are impacted by things that have happened to them. And it doesn't matter how long ago it was, it can still creep up just like that because of some memory, some smell, some sound, anything like that.
Absolutely.
Those things can be triggers. Okay. Okay. So you said EMDR came first and then brain spotting came. How did it come? It came from someone who was doing EMDR and found something new?
Brain spotting actually evolved from EMDR. Dr. David Grand was the founder of Brain Spotting, and this was in 2003, and he began to adapt his EMDR process because he was noticing that doing the rapid horizontal eye movements was causing some flooding in his clients, so began to slow it down. And then as he was slowing it down, he had noticed that his clients began to fix their gaze. And his hypothesis is that that our visual field is a reflection of the ongoing processes held in the brain and felt in our body. So he began to identify a point in the client's visual field, which we call a brain spot. So we have the client kind of fix their gaze or their visual gaze that connects to the midbrain and then allows the healing to begin there. So rather than the eye movements, they just fix their gaze. And it's a very simple setup. Rather than going through this long history and doing all of the background work, you can really just kind of start where the client's at. And it really has to do with attunement between the client and the therapist. You know, even the attunement goes as far as trying to find the brain spot. And that can be done where the client tells you where they feel it the most. Okay. You know, when we're talking about a specific situation, and we don't have to deal with a specific memory. We can just talk about kind of an overarching situation. I'm feeling really stressed out today. You know, where are you feeling that in your body? How distressing is it? And then the client can tell you, when I look over to my left, I can feel it more intensely. And then the client and I can work together to really fine tune that spot and really find it, the place where they can feel it the most. So the client can identify it, or I can, and I use a pointer. I don't know that I mentioned that. I use a pointer and start on one side of their visual field, left or right, and then just very slowly move my pointer from left to right or right to left, and just notice any changes in the client's ability to regulate. Sometimes the client will do a lot of deep breathing, or their eyes will twitch, or their eyes will get wide. And then really just notice what's happening in the client, and then identify a spot where I really notice more activation than others. And then just kind of have them fix their gaze there.
Okay. So that's kind of directed by you, what you notice and observe from them.
Yes.
Okay.
And then a third way we can do that is just called gaze spotting. So then just allow them to find their own spot just somewhere in their visual field without the pointer, and then just allow them to just kind of process that way.
Okay. So does somebody come to see you for EMDR and then you notice that they're getting stuck and then you end up moving on to brain spotting? Or do you have some people who start with you because they want to do brain spotting? They already know that that's the right fit for them. How does that work?
It's something that my clients and I kind of talk together and, okay. and make the decision together on which one seems to make the most sense for them. More people, in all honesty, have heard of EMDR because it has been around, you know, 20 years longer.
Sure.
So brain spotting is a relatively, I mean, even more new therapy modality than EMDR. So a lot of them aren't as familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And once we start talking about it, a lot of times the clients really like that one, because there is just they can talk as much as they want to while they're processing, because it all happens in the brain. So they don't have to share with me as much as what's going on in their head.
So someone might come in to see you and say, I've had trauma happen in my life, and together you might decide if they're ready for EMDR or not, because it sounds like you might do some talk therapy first in preparation for EMDR. So maybe it's talk therapy, maybe it's EMDR, maybe it's brain spotting. That's just something that you and your client decide together the best fit for them.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Perfect.
Yes. And I want to make sure that the client is in charge of this, because trauma is so traumatizing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. So I want them to feel like they've got a choice in this, and it's not something that is happening to them. It's something that they are part of, and they're an active participant in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. So are there some people who you say brain spotting is not right for them? Even if they say, I think this is what I want, I've heard things about it, I want to do it. Are there situations where you'd say, no, this is not the right fit for you?
Because brain spotting is so much about client therapist attunement with the client, I have not experienced that, because it is just they focus on whatever they're experiencing, the trauma, and I kind of have them process as much as they want to, and then we kind of go back into how's your body feeling, notice your body. So it's about not only my attunement to them, but they're also attunement into their own body and their experiences. So they have so much more control over what's happening that I have not found anybody who brain spotting really isn't a right fit for.
Sure.
It feels weird a lot of times, because they are not used to just sitting and staring at something. So it can feel a little weird the first time they do it, and they're like, what are you having me do?
Are you hypnotizing me? What's yes. happening here? Sure.
Yeah. But once they begin to notice that their thoughts are changing, and they're coming up with their own answers rather than us coming up with it together, it feels very empowering for them.
Sure. Okay. So it is a newer field, or a newer treatment approach in comparison to EMDR, even though EMDR is also new in comparison to other theories. What kind of research exists for the brain spotting? Because you mentioned the fMRI showing that change from the unconscious to the conscious, so, or the logical part of the brain. Is there anything brain spotting, or are they still kind of working through that, trying to figure out what the changes are?
They are still working on that, and there's still studies being done, but there are a couple of studies that have shown that there really is some good efficacy with using brain spotting. There was a study, a published study in just this year, 2022, with Filipino women who have experienced severe PTSD and engaged in brain spotting. And their symptoms decreased from very severe to mild or even absent after participating in brain spotting, and that those symptom reduction that continued for another 2 weeks after They stopped the treatment. And most of them reported that they really liked it because there wasn't a lot of assumptions, you know. So we just, as therapists, just observe everything. We assume nothing, you know, and we let the clients just kind of do what feels natural to them. Yeah, they're showing that it is kind of having some of the same clinical responses as EMDR. And I kind of assume that as we do more tests, we're going to see so much more of that. Mm-hmm. There's another study that compared EMDR and brain spotting and body scanning types of therapy. And the results between EMDR and brain spotting were very, very similar.
Sure.
However, the clients had reported that they almost preferred brain spotting because it is non-intrusive.
Sure.
And there's not as much talking that the therapist does, so they really get to guide the session.
Okay. So do they still process at all through their trauma, or that they don't actually have to go into the deep details of their trauma when they're doing brain spotting?
They do not have to go into the deep, deep details. Okay. They can just stare at this dot, which mm-hmm. I know sounds so crazy, mm-hmm. But our brains are crazy and mysterious. Mm-hmm. So, as they're focusing in on their brain spot where their eyes are set, sure. As they're focusing in on that, then they their brain is doing all the work for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, it seems kind of crazy when you think about that, but it's the same thing with like child development. If you are a kid who runs and climbs and plays in your early childhood years, your math skills are improved, your reading skills are improved. It's all about that physical aspect. So there are some interesting things about our bodies that are related to certain areas of our functioning that we have no idea are going to be impacted. So
absolutely.
And it's awesome if they can find something that is less painful, less traumatic for them to have to reprocess and re-experience those things mm-hmm. to find that healing. That's amazing.
Yes. And there's one thing that, you know, they say when you're trained in brain spotting is I don't need to understand it to know that it exists.
Yeah.
You know, so they, a lot of times it's hard to say the words, you know, when we experience something traumatic, you know, so mm-hmm. if they can just let their brains kind of work through that and continue to remain attuned to what their body is doing, there's so much healing in that. It's mm-hmm. just, it's a really, I get kind of corny with it, but it's really exciting to be a part of that and right. to witness that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when it comes to EMDR and brain spotting, what age group or like type of client is this for? I know I've heard there is some studies on EMDR with children. That's definitely an even newer field than EMDR. From your perspective, when you're working through trauma, what kind of ages do you typically work with for EMDR and then brain spotting?
I work with adolescents, so 11 and then all the way up to adult. Mm-hmm. I have personally found brain spotting and kind of using that gaze spot with some of the younger kids a little bit easier and just allowing them to just kind of, okay, you know, look there or look here and just kind of notice what your body is doing.
Okay.
And I've noticed some helpful things with that technique, but I've also noticed, and I've also had some really good experiences with adolescents doing EMDR. And because the brain is so malleable and it can, you know, change so easily, I've noticed with some of the adolescents or the younger adolescents, EMDR can be really effective in just a couple of sessions.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's positive.
Yeah, it is.
I was honestly expecting it to be different, that like one of the younger population is going to be like, no, I'm not going to stare. Where you're telling me to stare? What is this that you're asking me to do? Yeah. So. Okay, so it's been something that can work with that like lower adolescent age and up for both EMDR and brain spotting.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Awesome. Very cool. So if there's a parent that's listening to this, or a woman who wants, male or female, who wants to come in and do EMDR or brain spotting, is there anything that they need to know in advance that would be important for them to be prepared and understand what to expect?
As far as being prepared, not necessarily. You know, a lot of times people tell me, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, or I don't know what's expected of me. And because everybody is such an individual, there's no right or wrong with it. You know, so whatever they're experiencing, that's exactly what's supposed to be experiencing.
Okay.
So a lot of times there's just a lot of confusion. Like, am I doing it right? Absolutely. It just feels weird because this is something you're not used to doing.
Mm-hmm. Very different.
Yeah.
Out of your normal experience.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Okay. And you said, you know, like, so at that first session, that's going to be a conversation that you have together to figure out what's most comfortable and what feels best for them, because you don't want to re-traumatize them through the process of trying to heal that trauma.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah. The goal is not to increase symptoms.
Right. Absolutely. That's good. That's a good goal as a therapist, for sure. Mm-hmm. Which sometimes when we're working through trauma, maybe that does happen. It is stressful, but you're going to try to figure out the best approach to decrease that chance as much as possible.
And there's so much communication. I always tell my clients, please communicate with me. If you find that on your way to therapy, you're dreading it, that's important information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your goals are my goals. So, you know, and talking about just the brain functioning. So when we... Our brains, whatever we've been exposed to, is our idea of normal. You know, so sometimes our brain's idea of normal is dysfunctional.
Sure.
You know, so once we start digging into some of that healthier functioning and kind of challenging some of those negative cognitions, those negative thoughts about ourselves, it can feel really weird because dysfunction is normal. Mm-hmm. According to our own brains. So, you know, you have to kind of be prepared for that, you know, and kind of challenge yourself on that, going, okay, you know, on one hand, I know that this is how I want my life to be, but on the other hand, it feels really weird.
Mm-hmm.
That's typical, and that's kind of expected.
Now, typically when people are on a podcast, we always ask the question of, like, is there anything else that you really want to share? Because afterwards, you know, you're going to be eating lunch and you're going to say, oh, I totally should have talked about that. That was a really important topic. Is there anything you feel like I didn't ask, or like an important topic for parents or clients to know about EMDR, brain spotting, trauma treatment, that can be helpful for them to be aware of?
I think the only thing is just remembering to make sure that you're communicating. You know, just there is no information that is crazy or unimportant, you know. So if you're feeling uncomfortable, if you have questions, I encourage questions. You know, it's your own treatment, it's your life, so you have a right to ask the questions that you need to have answered, and I will take all the time we need to answer any of those questions.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagine it takes some time to build up that much trust to be able to share your deepest memory of something that was incredibly traumatic. And as a therapist too, I know that people come in and say, oh, if I tell you this, you're going to think that I'm crazy. And that's not our job. Like, we're here to help support you. And if you think it was something or is something that you want to change, like, we are here to help you with that.
Absolutely.
But we're not here to judge. That's kind of the whole mentality for us.
It really is. You know, and one of the nice things about both EMDR and brain spotting is I don't need to know the nitty gritty details of the trauma for the therapy to work.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to go into graphic detail about what happened. You just need to know it in your own brain and kind of have your own image of it, and your brain will do all the healing for you.
Sure. Absolutely. It probably feels more comfortable for some people to not have to, or to know going in that they don't have to do that if that's not what's right for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. I did not know much about brain spotting, so this was very informative for me as well to kind of understand what's going on. So, and thanks to you guys for joining us. If you did enjoy Angie's discussion about brain spotting, please feel free to leave a comment below. But I do want you to remember that the comment section is a public setting. We talked about trauma today. We talked about trauma treatment. So if your comment is a question about the treatment of your own trauma or your own experience or your desire to get started with brain spotting or EMDR at Encompass Mental Health, please refrain from leaving a comment and instead contact our office at 605-275-0009, extension 1, or you can email info@SiouxFallsCounseling.com to talk with our administrative team. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Knowledgeable Parent Podcast. Did you like what you heard? Share your opinion by rating the podcast on your favorite platform. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.